Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring, Ricky Ring the bell, Jim Bell, Desperado, ring the bell, sucker. This is Movie Fighters. Did you miss us?
I heard you missed us. We're back. That was a very good David Lee Roth.
It was.
I do want to point that out.
Did you know that this show was hosted by David Lee Roth and Will Smith?
Yep, that's exactly who we sound like. We could not sound any more like those two people.
In fact, this is the show where I, Matt Wilson, and Chris Sims watch movies and beat them up. Look, we had to spend some time away, okay? We weren't here for a while. We couldn't finish being Chan for the summer. Eventually, we will watch Around the World in 80 Days. That is our promise to you. But we had to come roaring back with something, right? We had to come back big. We had to come back hard. The only way we could think of to do that was to pop the squad. That's right. We're watching Suicide Squad, everybody.
Yep, that's the one. We knew. We talked to each other and we were like, we got to do something so dangerous that people will understand how much we are devoted to them, even if we had to take all that time off. My previous experience with the DC movies is that I hated one and then watched the next one and thought that everyone involved should be in jail.
But we both saw Wonder Woman and we thought it was good.
No, I have not seen Wonder Woman yet.
No, you haven't seen Wonder Woman yet. I thought Wonder Woman was good.
I am weirdly watching these in order somehow, some way.
It's like it was meant to be, in the way God intended.
So, but here's the thing, Matt. I have not seen Suicide Squad. You have.
I have, yes. I saw it on the plane. If you listen to our episode from Emerald City Comic Con, our War Rocket Ajax episode, then you will know that I watched it on the plane on the way to Seattle. That was my ill-fated plane ride that ended in a non-normal landing. The worst part of that plane ride was not the non-normal landing. It was watching Suicide Squad. That's not actually true. Thinking I might die was definitely worse. But it is. Okay,
Here's the thing, though. You didn't die. You did see Suicide Squad.
That's true. I want to make this more than abundantly clear. It's not good. We're going to watch this, and we're going to come back, and we're going to say it's not good. But I have a certain affinity for it. Affinity is not the right word. Fascination with it. Interest. It raised some interest in me because even though it's not good, and it makes absolutely no sense, like when we're trying to recount the plot of this movie, we are going to fail spectacularly. But it has the characters right enough for them to be interesting, and it at least has something of an attempt to have like a look and feel to it. It attempts to have a personality in a way that I feel like Man of Steel and BVS, Batman versus Superman, do not. Batman versus Superman are just dark, grimy movies. And Man of Steel are just dark, grimy movies with that are cynical, you know? Suicide Squad is trying for something. It fails spectacularly at it. But the director and writer is David Ayer, A-Y-E-R, the Spanish word for yesterday. His name is David Yesterday.
David Yesterday is like a kick-ass supervillain name.
Who is the writer of Training Day. Like, he wrote an Oscar-nominated screenplay. He's written a bunch of, like, cop movies up to this point.
Matt, Ben Affleck fucking won one.
That's true. That is true. Ben Affleck is, in fact, in this movie as Batman, by the way, so keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, brother.
But, like, he, you know, David Ayer is not, like, some nobody. He's written, like, he wrote the screenplay for the first Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, okay, well, to be fair, the first Fast and Furious movie, it's not what they become.
It's not what they become, that's true. But, like, it's not a bad movie. Like, nothing in his filmography... Nothing in his filmography is bad. You know? It's until just... this. Until this, yeah. And there's a really interesting video on YouTube, if you want to go find it, all about the editing in Suicide Squad. Like, this is clearly a movie that was assembled into something after it was finished. And we are going to see that as we watch it, very clearly.
I think everybody knows where we stand on the movies. Man of Steel might have been my least favorite movie until I saw Batman vs. Superman, which I did for charity.
I'm going to come totally clean. I watched the first half hour of Man of Steel and tapped the fuck out. Partially because
how far did you get?
Partially because I knew it was what was coming. It was just past the Krypton parts. Because I didn't even like those. People said the Krypton parts were good, and I didn't like them. So I was
the Krypton parts were just like visually interesting, unlike anything else in that movie.
The Krypton parts were weird and not good to me, so I just tapped out after that.
The Krypton parts actually felt like a comic book because a man in weird space armor rode around on a giant dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then put like his enemies into giant dildos.
Yeah, that did happen. That did happen. Yeah. Batman vs. Superman, I have not attempted to watch.
I loathed it with a passion. It is a morally reprehensible film on every level. It is hateful. It's just ugly. It is dour. It's quite bad. But here's the weird thing about this movie. Here's one of several weird things about this movie. I'm a big fan of Suicide Squad in the comics.
Yeah.
Like the John Ostrander, Kim Yale, Luke McDonald run on Suicide Squad. Ostrander being the writer who stayed on for the entire run. Like, it's in my top five, probably, favorite runs in comics. It's, like, up there with, like, Walt Simonson's Thor and the Claremont Byrne X-Men. Like, I love that run. And it's such an easy concept. It's, like, I could give you a pitch for a Suicide Squad movie that would make so much sense. Here's the problem. Suicide Squad, in the comics, comes out of an established universe. Suicide Squad happens because there are a bunch of hokey supervillains with names like fucking Captain Boomerang that nobody really wanted to use anymore in the 80s when comics were growing up, Biff Bam Pow. So they're existing characters that get put into a new situation in a way that's interesting. The problem with this movie is that these are not existing characters, or the problem with this concept, I should say. We have not been introduced to any of these characters. The like only supervillains that we have been introduced to in the movies so far are fucking dead. Like, this movie should be about Lex Luthor and the corpse of General Zod and the corpse of KG Beast, because that's who we've had so far.
I'll say this much. The movie tries to have it both ways and nearly gets away with it. Well, first of all, let me say, if you feel like you haven't been introduced to these characters, get ready to be introduced to them repeatedly, because the first 45 minutes of this movie is introductions. We are going to be introduced.
Now, Matt, that brings up an interesting we're at a crossroads. We're at a we're at one of those Telltale Games make a decision points, Matt. Because the reason we're watching Suicide Squad is because if you have an HBO subscription through Amazon, it is available to watch just for free.
Or on HBO Now or HBO Go. It's on all of those.
Are you aware that there are two versions that are available to us?
Yes. Well, I only see the one. I only see Suicide Squad. Is there like an extended cut or something?
Oh, there is an extended cut, and it is 14 minutes longer.
I'm going to say no to that one. I mean, look, it might make the movie make more sense. But first of all, I'm looking at my HBO Now right now, and all I have available to me is regular old Suicide Squad. I don't have an extended cut available to me. The other thing is, I think we need to see the theatrical version of the movie. I think it's cheating to watch
the third thing is that the extended cut is 2 fucking hours and 14 fucking minutes long.
Yeah, that too. But I, you know, much like people say, the extended cut of Batman versus Superman makes it make more sense. There's a chance that the extended
cut, I mean, it might. I can't imagine that movie making less sense.
There's a chance that Suicide Squad could make more sense with an extended cut, but in the same vein, I can't see how this movie can make more sense. Like, it's already such a mess that there's no way to salvage it, really. But what I was saying about the movie trying to have it both ways, these characters are introduced when they are introduced multiple times as though they are part of the existing shared universe.
Which is endemic of the weird way they've treated Batman and Superman in these movies, where Man of Steel is about Superman showing up for the first time. He's in his 30s, and he's just now deciding he should be Superman. But when they introduce Batman, he's old as shit. He's Dark Knight Returns Batman. You can't start with Dark Knight Returns Batman. He can't return if he hasn't been here.
And he's been around for like 30 years, right?
He's been around so fucking long.
For like 20 years. There's been a Batman 20 years before there was a Superman in this universe.
And no one talked about it in the Superman movie, which I think would be the only thing we would talk about, especially if it was like 2 miles away like it is in that movie. But anyway.
All right. Well, before we get going, let's go through the lineup of the Suicide Squad in this movie, because it is pretty much the Suicide Squad lineup you would expect. Right? It's very much comic Suicide Squad with Harley Quinn added in. So we've got Harley Quinn in here.
Well, Harley Quinn since 2011 has been more predominantly identified with the Suicide Squad than anything else.
That's totally true. Or maybe like being friends with Poison Ivy, right? We've got Deadshot.
Friends. Gal pals.
Quote unquote friends. Exactly. Yes. We've got Deadshot in here.
Classic Suicide Squad character, basically reinvented by Engelhart and Rogers and then revitalized and given so much more depth by Ostrander and McDonald.
We've got Captain Boomerang.
Again, classic Suicide Squad character.
Diablo.
Okay.
Killer Croc.
Not really a classic Suicide Squad character, but a decent enough addition.
Believable enough to be a member of the Suicide Squad. We've got Rick Flagg.
Again, very like classic Suicide Squad character.
Leading up the team. Enchantress is in here, but we will soon discover that she is not actually a member of the team in any conceivable way.
Matt, are you talking about June Moon?
That's exactly what I'm talking about, June Moon.
Also in the classic Ostrander lineup.
We've got Slipknot.
Oh, always forget. Always forget there's a DC character named Slipknot. I believe did in fact also appear in the classic Suicide Squad run. I believe died in Suicide Squad.
Get ready to forget him all over again. Katana is in here.
Katana, not a Suicide Squad character, introduced around the same time in Batman and the Outsiders a few years before. A superhero, not a criminal. Here's an interesting fact. I do know for a fact that Mike W. Barr, the co-creator of Katana, along with Jim Aparo, was excited to see her in a movie. So it's got that going for it.
She's got an interesting role in here. She's not exactly a member of the team. She's more of a Rick Flagg leader kind of character. And then leading up the whole operation is Amanda Waller, the Wall.
One of the best characters in comics. I am genuinely dreading seeing Amanda Waller in this movie.
She's played by Viola Davis, who certainly has the gravitas as an actress to pull it off. Like, she is not miscast. I'll tell you that much. Like, Viola Davis has it. She has the chops to play Amanda Waller. She's certainly a much better cast Amanda Waller than the DC TV universe Amanda Waller, who is a lady who looks like she's always about to fall asleep. I watched a lot of Arrow, everybody.
You did watch a lot of Arrow.
Okay. Before we get going, Chris, it's time for the hottest segment in all of podcasting. People have been waiting for it. We've done a few specials, but we haven't done it on a Movie Fighters in a while because we haven't done a Movie Fighters. It's time for Snack Situation. You love to fight for something to eat. Chris, what are you snacking on for Suicide Squad?
Well, Matt, as you know, it's Christmas.
I do know that.
here we are. We are on currently the 16th day of the 67 days of Christmas. I have a small bowl of Christmassy peanut M&Ms. That's right. They're red and green. Peanut M&Ms, classic snack. I've had these for a while. I had to choose between either those or the other Christmas go-to white fudge Oreos. Because, yes, there are four boxes of them in the house right now. Because last year there was a shortage. And so we're stocking up. I've got some Christmassy M&Ms. And right before we started recording, I did slam the caramel brulee latte from Starbucks. My favorite of the Christmas time seasonal drinks. But now, Matt, here's a hot tip. I get that with coconut milk instead of regular milk, and it doesn't make me quite as flummy.
Okay, good to know. Very nice to know.
Yeah, you're welcome, everybody, for this crisp, non-flummy voice you're hearing right now. Matt, what are you snacking on?
Well, Chris, you take two steps forward. I take two steps back. Uh-huh. We come together because opposites attract. You went with Christmas. I have some leftover Halloween candy. Because we're in that in-between time.
We're not. We're 16 days into the 67 days of Christmas.
But what I have here in my little baggie, left over from Halloween, are some two packs of Starbursts. Because you know I love a Starburst. I also have some peanut M&Ms, but they're just regular fun-sized peanut M&Ms. And then I have some Halloween Kit Kats.
Matt, may I ask you a question?
Please.
The fact that you phrase this as, I have these in my baggie, mm-hmm. and the variety of snacks that you are snacking on today, definitely makes me feel like you went trick-or-treating.
I did not. These were candies that I bought for trick-or-treaters who I thought might come to my house, but we got none. So now I just have this candy, and I guess I need to get rid of it. So I'm going to eat it while we watch Suicide Squad.
All right, one last thing before we move on into the film, or a couple last things. One, I want to say that I do quite like the poster art with all the skulls. I think that's really, like, again, that at least has an aesthetic.
Yeah.
The fucking You Can't Save the World Alone Justice League poster is among the worst things I have seen in my life. But this one at least has, you know, it weirdly has a jack-o'-lantern in the logo itself.
Are you talking about like the Justice League poster? Are you talking about the coexist bumper sticker of posters?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm talking about the one that, like, is very easy to modify into just saying, you can't save the world.
If you have an HBO subscription on Amazon, or if you have HBO Now or HBO Go, it is available to watch there. It is also available to rent in various places if you would like to rent it. And it might be streaming somewhere else. I don't know. If you want to watch 2016's Suicide Squad along with us, we are watching the theatrical cut, not the extended cut. So keep that in mind. We're going to take a little break right here. Pause for the cause. You're going to hear an ad and a musical interlude. We're going to watch the movie. Then we're going to come back and talk about it after that. And we are back from watching Suicide Squad. Chris, I don't want to mess around trying to get too deep into the plot of this movie.
You and David Ayer both.
Yeah, no kidding. I just want to quickly run through the events of the movie, and then we can talk about everything else, which everything else, one, is clearly more important to the filmmakers, and two, is kind of more interesting, because the plot is the thing that, one, drags this movie down immensely. It makes no sense, but I think if we can just file it down into its component parts, we can say what happens.
Okay, can I just, Matt, do you mind if I expose the business for a minute?
Sure, pull back the curtain. Break kayfabe.
I'm breaking. This is a shoot, brother. You had a little internet hiccup yesterday.
Yes, so I had there was an outage with my internet provider. I was informed that a fiber optic cable had become damaged and had to be repaired.
Did it have damage written on its forehead? Was it rotten? What I'm getting at is, it has been a full day since we watched this movie. I have had to live with this in my head for a day. And like, we recorded a podcast last night where we did not talk about this movie at all. So it's just been kicking around up there. I have been marinating in this in a way that usually when we do movie fighters, we watch the movie, we talk about it, and then it exits my head. Like, I don't remember anything from any movie we've ever watched except the Bonzo voice. You can tell me the plot of fucking Doom the movie, and I would have no idea what you were talking about right now. But Suicide Squad, it's in here. It's in here forever.
I remember one thing about Doom the movie, and that's that it becomes a first-person shooter movie near the end. But
yes.
Yeah, there's not much that I really remember from that. I do and will always remember specific images from Suicide Squad more than anything. Like, the thing about this movie, and we'll get to this when we get to, you know, high points and low points, but it is a visually interesting movie. I won't say it's necessarily always visually good, but at least it's going for a particular look and it's going for a particular aesthetic, and it has images in it that are memorable.
It honestly is, of the three DC movies I've seen, of the DC extended universe, which is apparently not an official term, which is great because it's very bad. This is by far the most visually interesting and the most visually competent. Like, you can tell what's going on for the most part. Like, it's still dark. It still takes place entirely at night. But, like, the costumes are interesting and eye-catching. They do some cool visual tricks with, especially in the character introduction. This movie is not bad to look at for the most part, which I know is a very low bar.
Aside from some bad character design work, like, some of the characters are not nice to look at. Joker.
Oh, no, Joker's bad. Like, Joker's a bad design. I think Harley's kind of a bad design. But I think they're at least interesting and devoted to a particular aesthetic. Like, yes. You can't look at Joker and Harley and say that's not what they were going for, right?
Not at all. And it's not like some kind of middling, middle-of-the-road, just grimy, gritty, washed-out gray. All those descriptive words that I could use for the other DC movies.
Yeah.
There are colors in this movie. There are very distinct design choices being made. They're not all good, but they're choices at the very least.
The only like visual design choices that I think are like actively bad, Killer Croc looks bad.
Killer Croc is a bad makeup job, I think.
It's very weird because like, he is himself pretty generic, but also his head is way bigger than his body, so he looks like a Goomba from the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yes, I think that's
like more than a crocodile.
But I think that's the result of the makeup, right? Like, all those prosthetics are on his head, and that makes his head, like, much bigger than the actor's head really is.
You gotta give him a big body to go with that big head.
Yeah.
You gotta get, like, a Braun Strowman in there.
Or like, put him in a prosthetic suit.
Yeah.
Or CGI him. Like, the fact that...
Or CGI him.
The fact that Killer Croc is not CGI and is just a guy is wild.
It's very weird. The other thing, I don't know if I would say this is actively bad, but Joel Kinnaman, he's the default player character in Saints Row 3. Like, he's just, before you tweak the sliders, before you customize anything, here's a white man, much like in RoboCop, like my eyes just kind of slide off of him.
Yeah, Joel Kinnaman plays Rick Flagg in this, we should note. And he was also RoboCop in the RoboCop remake. And yeah, he is very... He's a blank slate.
He is, on which we can all project our dreams and aspirations.
Even when he's supposed to be emoting in this movie, he is flat.
Yeah.
We got to the point where we were watching this when anytime he would talk, we would just repeat what he said because it was so weird and flat and not
like...
We gotta
stab her in the heart.
We gotta cut her heart out.
We gotta cut her heart out. I'm gonna blow your head up. It's very bad.
Oh, this is the same thing we said about RoboCop where he mumbled everything.
Yeah. He's flattening it out.
He's Swedish. And so... to sound American, he goes a little Southern and just flattens everything out. He just talks.
You gotta cut her heart out.
Your daughter wrote you every day.
It was like an audiobook read by Iggy Pop.
It was very Jim Osterberg.
I would also say that the second form Gozer version of Enchantress that we get towards the end is actually kind of a really bad and very poorly presented design, but we'll get to that.
Enchantress, so
what's the flaw?
Enchantress is badly designed throughout the movie. I do not understand. I kept repeating this as we were watching it. I do not understand what the thinking is behind. She's got to be dirty. Like, she's got to constantly just be covered in grime. Like, oh, not dirty enough. Put more grime on her. Anyway, we did come up with an explanation for why that is. We might get to that in a little bit. So the plot. I'm going to try to knock out the plot in 6 sentences.
Okay.
Sentence 1. Amanda Waller assembles a team and gets permission from the U.S. government to send it out on missions. This is Task Force X. That was technically 2 sentences, but I needed the second one was parenthetical. Sentence 2. The team goes on a mission in some generic city to obtain a secret high-level target. And on the way, they encounter putties, essentially. Like weird soldier things. Sentence 3. As it turns out, their high-level target is Amanda Waller herself, who has secured herself in the top of a building because the Enchantress is causing a ruckus in that city for reasons that are unclear. Sentence 4. The rescue mission goes awry because of an attempt by the Joker to save Harley Quinn. The Joker's helicopter crashes as well as Amanda Waller's. That's 5 sentences. Sentence 6. After all those screw-ups, the team goes after the Enchantress, who is in the same city, and defeats her by cutting out her heart. There you go. There's your 6-sentence plot summary of Suicide Squad. How'd I do, Chris?
Not bad. You basically hit the high points of the what we would consider the plot. Would it surprise everyone listening to find out that this movie goes for 2 hours and 2 minutes?
Okay, well, partially because that first sentence was 40 minutes long.
Yes.
Because, as I said when we talked about this movie at Emerald City, there's half an hour of introductions in this movie. Not only do we get introductions, okay, there's a scene where Amanda Waller is sitting in a restaurant eating what has to be a 40-ounce steak, because she just keeps eating that steak, telling these two military guys about the various members, the various people in Bellevue Penitentiary that she wants to recruit for the Suicide Squad. Each time she does that, not only do we get some flashback exposition scenes about the characters, like, oh, here's Deadshot, he loves his daughter, but he's also an assassin. Here's Harley Quinn, she fell in love with the Joker when she was a psychiatrist at Arkham Asylum. Here's Captain Boomerang, he's quirky. Here's Killer Croc, he lives in the water. Like, the further it goes through, the less detail we get about each one, because these characters get less and less important.
Because clearly the ones that are important are Deadshot and Harley Quinn. Like, that's the ones the movie wants and expects you and is correct that you will give a shit about. But
because they're the best performances in the movie, right? Like, I kind of like Captain Boomerang in the movie. Like, I don't think he's bad. He's very over the top and cartoonish, but I kind of like that.
Well, I mean, his name is Captain Boomerang.
Yeah, but so,
like,
but there's not a lot of character there. Like, Jai Courtney is just playing like a weird, quirky guy, and that's all there is to Captain Boomerang in here, really.
Well, you say we get 40 minutes of introductions, but it's not like we get 10 minutes of introduction for Deadshot, 10 minutes of introduction for Harley Quinn, 7 minutes for Captain Boomerang, 5 minutes for Diablo. It's that we get first thing that happens in the movie.
We get repeated introductions because we get those flashback scenes. There are those title cards that come up that say like different things about each character. But there's also
training card stats.
Those are actually neat visuals. I kind of like that. In addition to that, we're introduced to them in prison even before that happens. And then we're introduced to them again as the team is being assembled. Like, we get another scene where it's like, hey, Deadshot shoots good. Hey, Harley Quinn, she's out there. Hey, Diablo, he killed a bunch of people with fire in a prison yard, and now he wants to be a pacifist, right? Like, we get those introductions repeated like two or three times.
We absolutely get nothing out of the first two, because the first two things, the first two scenes that we get before we get Amanda Waller and her 40-ounce steak are Deadshot in prison and Harley Quinn in prison, so that we can see, like, Will Smith being a quippy badass and Margot Robbie doing aerial silks, none of which is, like, entertaining or necessary. Like, this movie would be so much better if they would just trim down the introductions, but I kind of see where the logic is coming from. Because, like we talked about with the comics, the Suicide Squad comic, everyone's an established character. They might be obscure, but they're established. The movies have not put the work in to establish any of these characters on their own before they come together. So it feels like it has to give us introductions over and over and over, and it's not necessary. The one thing that I do like about it, like, the movie should have started with a prologue, and the prologue should have been Deadshot and Harley Quinn getting taken down by Batman, which we do actually see in the movie. Like, you know, just say that he had one busy night and took down Deadshot and Harley Quinn both. And then in a nice, what I think is actually kind of a nice little moment, Flash takes out Captain Boomerang. Like, we actually get to see the Flash fighting a Flash villain. Like, if you want to introduce your three main characters like that, have them introduced getting taken down by the heroes as like a little James Bond cold open, and then maybe meeting the others in prison, or maybe have, you know, have them, instead of being brought to prison, brought to Amanda Waller directly to and introduce the other cast members that way. And you could accomplish that in half the time.
Yeah, I mean,
honestly,
remember when Brad Meltzer was writing Justice League, and
I too,
it spent like two issues of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman sitting around a table looking at cards, deciding who to recruit for the team.
Oh, it's extremely bad.
It was like, it was more than two issues. It was like a whole story arc. That's what the start of this movie is.
Yes.
And imagine how much more we would have liked the movie if it had started with some action. Like, if the Suicide Squad team had already been assembled and they were on this secret mystery mission to recruit their, or to find their high level target. Because here's the other thing. While they're on that mission, after they find the target, after they find Amanda Waller, they become demoralized because, first of all, the mission fails. And two, they haven't been told the truth about anything, right? Because they don't even know about what's going on with Enchantress at this point.
Yeah, they don't know that it's the Enchantress.
Here's the thing about the Enchantress. Her plot makes no fucking sense whatsoever. She was a archaeologist. She went on an archaeology expedition. She immediately, as soon as she found an artifact, broke it because she's a fucking moron. Because she's a 20-year-old who has a PhD somehow, who looks like she's 16.
Yeah, I like Cara Delevingne a lot. I don't think she's bad in this movie. I do think that, like, when she is the second form Gozer at the end, she just looks like the Empress from Neverending Story. Like, she looks super, super young.
I mean, she looks super young throughout, and even the filmmakers knew that she was probably too young for this role, because the entire last half of the movie, when she's Enchantress and she's like doing her weird backwards movement and using her machine that is never explained what it's supposed to do. When she's Rita Repulsa. We started referring to her and her brother as Enchantress and Enchantro. Enchantro Repulso or Revolto. Because that's a very funny joke. But anyway, they dub her with somebody else. She even sounds like fucking Gozer during those parts. Like, it sounds like the same person talking, the same actress that they dubbed her with. But we got on a little tangent there about Enchantress. The point I was trying to make is, if they had started in the middle of the action, there was even a way to do all the backstory in the middle somewhere. because when the team gets demoralized, they all tell Rick Flagg, we're not working for you anymore. We're going to go in this bar and have a drink, right? So they all walk into the bar, and then there's more exposition, mainly about Diablo. Like, that scene is mostly about Diablo accidentally killing his family, right? But you could have done a lot of that, if not all of that, there. Like, there's even a thing where Rick Flagg pulls... So, for some reason, he's carrying Deadshot's daughter's letters around on this mission. But I guess it's like a motivation tool. And so he pulls them out and he says to Deadshot, your daughter wrote to you every day. She wrote you every damn day. Like, that's a lead into more backstory about Deadshot, right? Like, you could have done all of that there instead of front-loading it so heavily and wearing down the audience with such a long introduction to the movie, such a long prologue.
I don't think that they necessarily needed to do that, because, like, the whole premise of Suicide Squad is just Dirty Dozen in comics, right? And yeah. Dirty Dozen as a film, which is a movie that I love, spends a good bit of its runtime introducing characters and, like, showing them coming together as a team. Like, the actual mission is, like, 20 minutes at the end of the movie. And I don't think that would have necessarily worked there, but it definitely doesn't work the way they did it.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris.
Okay.
In Dirty Dozen, is a lot of the character moments / plot twists, are a lot of those predicated on character relationships which have not been earned?
No, Dirty Dozen is a good film.
Yeah. That's the biggest problem character-wise in this movie.
There's a point at the end of this movie where Diablo refers to these five, like, psychopaths that he's been hanging out with, these like, murderers?
People he should not like. People with whom he has had no real positive interaction. At best, Deadshot motivated him one time.
By insulting him?
Yes.
Like, he refers to them as his family. Why? Why would he think that? Why would he at all think that?
Because David Ayer wrote The Fast and the Furious, but... Yeah, like, he says, I already lost one family, I'm not going to lose another one. And it's just like, how are you this close already? Like, there's a scene not long before that where, as Harley Quinn is escaping, because the Joker has deactivated her head bomb, they do keep the head bombs from the Suicide Squad comics. Joker has deactivated her head bomb, so it doesn't work when Amanda Waller pushes the button. She gets on the helicopter. She's like, the thing where she's doing aerials pays off because she's doing aerials off the side of the helicopter.
But I don't think that needed to be set up in the opening moments of the movie, but go on.
No. But so Amanda Waller turns to Deadshot and says, kill her. Kill her right now. And Deadshot says, why would I do that? And Waller says, even though they've already made this deal previously, Waller says, I'll make sure your daughter has the best education. You'll get to see her. Like, she makes a deal about Deadshot's daughter. And Deadshot says, okay, she's dead. And so he walks over, puts his sniper rifle up, and points it toward Harley Quinn. He holds it there for a second, shoots. She pretends to be dead for a second and then pops back up. Deadshot turns around and says, I missed. We know from everything we've seen in the movie up to this point, Deadshot does not miss.
Yes. It's his deal.
He can hit the same spot on a target repeatedly.
One of the better scenes of the movie, actually, because when when we're all introduced to Deadshot for, I think, the third time, they take him to a firing range in the prison. And they've just laid out guns, and when he realizes that they're real guns and they want to see what he can do, he just unloads like 6 or 7 handguns, machine guns, rifles into these targets and shoots every bullet through the same hole.
Right in the middle of the head every time. Yeah, that part's cool. The scenes in the prison when they're recruiting the various members of the Suicide Squad, those are the best introductions in the movie because they say the most by doing the least. right?
Yes.
They're the most narratively expedient, because we get that Deadshot scene. We also get the scene where Diablo, they're trying to recruit Diablo, and Diablo's like, no, I'm a pacifist now. I don't hurt anybody. And then he like puts up his hands and waves them, and he says, I think he makes the fire say goodbye as he's waving his hands. I like that Diablo scene too.
Like, Diablo is the closest anyone really has to an arc, because Diablo is the character who's not actually a supervillain in the comics, but he like starts out by saying, I would rather die than raise my hands in anger again. And the only thing that gets him to fight is that he's helping, like, he's saving the others. So I get that. It's just the character relationships, everybody just becomes best friends immediately.
Yeah, the thing where Deadshot misses Harley Quinn, he has no reason to do this. In what universe would we believe that this Deadshot cares about Harley Quinn, who he's known for a few days, maybe? Like, we never got any sense that they knew each other in prison, right? They never crossed paths. Harley Quinn is kept in a fucking tiger cage.
They are introduced to each other as they are going on the mission. There's a mention 10 minutes after this that Deadshot says, like, I don't kill women or children. And it's so, like, offhand that it's meant to be something, like, it comes off as something that was probably in an earlier draft of the script, or maybe it was in his trading card stats, which go away fast enough that you do read everything. A better version of that scene is Deadshot saying, like, Amanda Waller being like, hey, kill her. You're a hitman. I've got a contract. I'll do, like, I'll take care of your daughter, whatever. And Deadshot going, I don't kill women. I don't kill women or children. And, like, standing his ground and pushing back against Waller a little because he has his weird code, which is, again, what makes Deadshot in the comics so good, because he's the one who pushes back and has this weird code. He gets out of the squad after serving missions and then stays because he likes it.
Yeah, it definitely should not be about some kind of, like, friendship between Deadshot and Harley Quinn, which has totally been unearned. At best, up to that point, they've been grudging allies, right?
They talk to each other twice. Like, they have a conversation with each other twice, and one of them is when Harley has yet another origin flashback, like, in the middle of the movie, and it comes back, and she, like, pulls her gun on Deadshot because she's in the middle of this hallucination, and he's like, hey, are you okay? That's the most interaction that they've had up to that point. And Deadshot's also the one who knows that she is getting texts from the Joker, who is, look, if Batman in this universe is like this, then the Joker's a monster. Like, Joker's way past where he is in the comics. And in the comics, he's, you know, a nightmare creature.
So incredible mass murderer. Yeah.
There's no reason for Deadshot to not go, oh, she's a liability. Like, Joker's gonna fuck this mission.
It's one of many lingering questions, right? Like, the character relationships is a question. Let's just go through some questions that this movie raises.
Well, but before we do that, Matt, I do want to say, this movie is bad. It's a bad movie. But it's kind of refreshing because it's just regular bad. Like, it just doesn't make sense, and the characters are kind of bad, and there's a lot of, like, bad designs going on. It's not, like, morally reprehensible, like Man of Steel or Batman v Superman movie.
You could justify everything that the characters do because they're already villains, right? They're already supervillains who are in prison. You don't have to hold them up to a moral standard.
The part that I think gets closest to being, like, genuinely, like, offensive on a moral level is after they rescue Amanda Waller, she pulls out a gun and kills all the people who were in the office helping her. Like, all the government employees who were in the office helping her run the thing.
Yeah.
And because they're not cleared to know anything about this. But then Rick Flagg immediately goes, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I've done that before. That's fine. That's, you know, that's government stuff. Whatever.
Yeah.
Which, again, like, Amanda Waller is a hard ass. I don't think she's that kind of hard ass, but whatever.
It's a very cynical view of the U.S. intelligence operation, which, look,
yeah.
I don't know that I totally disagree with it.
The movie is not offensive to me. It's just that it has bad characterization and a bad narrative. And I think it starts with the fact that the Suicide Squad only exists because Amanda Waller created the Suicide Squad. If Amanda Waller hadn't created the Suicide Squad, then the Enchantress never goes Broken Arrow and summons Enchantro and tries to build her new machine god. Again, it's the problem with the Justice League comics that we always talk about, where there's not a fucking villain. They're just fighting each other again.
Well, I mean, Enchantress is the villain, but she's the villain because she got dragged into this.
Yeah. But she's supposed to be on the team.
Because in the meeting where Amanda Waller is trying to prove that a Suicide Squad should exist, she does a demonstration where she summons the Enchantress. And that sets all this shit off.
Again, it's the same problem that you have in the other two movies. They want to do the fucking second story first. They want to do the story where Superman dies.
Nothing is earned. First. Nothing is earned.
They want to do, yeah. They want to do Dark Knight Returns first. They want to do the story where the Suicide Squad is betrayed by one of their own first. You can't do that. You gotta send them on one mission before you have one of their own go rogue.
And you had a great idea for what that mission should be that would play off of Man of Steel. I think you should talk about that here.
It's something that I wrote about before, but like the logical John Ostrander-style mission for the movie universe Suicide Squad, right? Because the Suicide Squad's expendable and deniable. That's the two big things. In Man of Steel, there's a giant machine in Metropolis that's got another machine on the other side of the world, then they're like, you know, Dutch dooring the planet Earth or whatever and blowing it up. When Superman blows up the machine, both machines blow up, but obviously the government's going to come in and take the stuff that's in Metropolis, but the other side of the world would be like Indonesia. It would be Southeast Asia. It would be like closer to China even. So the government can't go in and get that, but it's dangerous Kryptonian technology. If they want it, they've got to come up with a way to go get it. So why not send Deadshot and Diablo and Captain Boomerang, who's a thief, and Rick Flag to keep everything in order? Like, that's a movie that follows logically and allows you to at least assemble the team. Or maybe that's like the cold open, you know? Like, do something to establish the team and what they do. This team, the thing they do in this movie, they're not really presented as expendable. I guess they're kind of deniable, but their main problem, Deadshot's main problem at the end of this movie is nobody's going to know what we did. Is that really the... He wants his daughter to think he's a hero. That's not Deadshot's Suicide Squad arc. That's fucking Clue Master's Suicide Squad arc.
Yeah.
They made Deadshot fucking Clue Master, Matt.
Character-wise, yes. Skills-wise, no. But yeah.
They send Harley Quinn on this mission through what is essentially a zombie town, right? Like a zombie city. A city full of, like, putty patrollers.
They're putties.
That are taken over by Enchantress Matt.
Like, okay. Let's talk about this for a second. Our friend Chris Haley, who has watched Mortal Kombat Annihilation 400 times.
365.
I mean, I'm going to say he's watched it a few times before that, so let's say 370. He's watched Mortal Kombat Annihilation more times than anyone on Earth, most likely. Including the person who edited Mortal Kombat Annihilation. He draws some very convincing parallels between that movie and this movie. There are a lot of similarities. The way that we know that the Suicide Squad is expendable, like you were talking about, is because Slipknot gets his head blown up when he tries to escape. He shows up just to have his head blown up. And we know that he doesn't matter because he doesn't get a title card like everybody else. He just walks out of a car and it says, "Hey, I'm Slipknot."
And nobody goes, like the band? Which would have been a choice joke. Even though I usually hate that's Green Arrow. That's a stupid name. Like, Slipknot, I think we can get away with making fun of.
Yeah, and Harley Quinn, half of Harley Quinn's dialogue in this movie is one-liners that she says to the camera.
Yeah, she is constantly camera pointed directly at her, no one else in the shot. She is facing the camera, delivering a one-liner. They're clearly shooting her for the trailer.
And that would have been a good one for her. When many of them fail, many of them are very bad. I think they have like a 25% success rate. The point I was making is there's an argument to be made that this movie is not, in fact, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, but is Power Rangers, not the movie, the TV version of the movie, because there's a lot of similarities.
Yeah, I think so. It's, you pointed out when they go into the city that everything's super video gamey, because we have Deadshot, who's covered in guns. We have Rick Flag, who's like a highly trained soldier armed with a machine gun. We've got like Captain Boomerang, who has these razor sharp, occasionally Wi-Fi enabled boomerangs that he can throw around. And then we have Harley Quinn, who has a baseball bat. And they're like taking out the same number of zombies. And I don't understand why they sent Harley Quinn on this mission. I know why she's in the movie. It's because she's a super popular character that has been at the center of the Suicide Squad franchise since 2011. And they wanted to, you know, be successful. So they put her in here. But there's no narrative reason for her to go on the mission. And if you're going to make a movie with the fucking Joker in it, why not have the mission be go kill the Joker? And Harley Quinn is out for revenge for being abandoned.
If not go kill the Joker, at the very least, go get the Joker so we can put him back in Arkham Asylum or contain him somehow. He could have been at the top of that building instead of Amanda Waller, who was a total non-reveal. Like, it's such an anti-climax when they get to the top of that building. It's just Amanda Waller in there. Amanda Waller hasn't even been off screen for 10 minutes by that point.
She's constantly, like, Skyping in. Like, people literally hold up iPads with Amanda Waller on and be like, hey, she wants to FaceTime with you. Bring the kids. Grandma's calling. Why, like, couldn't the high-value target have been the Joker who is, like, turning state's evidence on someone? Like, or that, like, wouldn't this movie be so much better if they had to go deal with the Joker who's already in the fucking movie?
Counterpoint, that would mean more Jared Leto in the movie, which I do not want.
Okay, we gotta talk about this. Every time he's on screen, I said this out loud to Matt. I was like, I cannot believe he put that much effort. Like, did all the, like, full method, I'm in character, I'm gonna jack off to roadkill, or whatever it is he did. Like, he put so much effort into being the Joker, and that's the performance he came out with. It's the most basic shit. The makeup does half the work.
If there was any argument to be made for method not being worth it, it's Jared Leto in this movie.
Yeah, Lee Strasberg saw this and was like, I gotta go rethink some things.
Like,
he's just got a weird voice. It's like makeup and voice, and that's it. I can't imagine if this is him trying this hard. Like, I legitimately felt compassion and pity because he's clearly working his ass off. It's like watching like a child push a wheelbarrow full of bricks, Matt. Like, it's God bless him. He's really out there doing it.
What's all this blah, blah, blah?
I gotta go get Harley Quinn. Like, it's so bad.
He's doing like a 1920s gangster thing. I don't know whose idea it was to put the smile tattoo on his hand. That's the dumbest shit I've ever seen.
It's okay. Okay. I feel like I feel about the smile on his hand the way you feel about Ultraman snorting green kryptonite like cocaine. Because it's very stupid.
It's very stupid. Very bad. It's,
but like,
so stupid.
I like that they use it.
And the one scene they got Common for, in which it doesn't matter at all that that's Common, he's literally on screen for less than a minute and then gets killed.
For reasons I don't understand either, because he's like showing up to be like, yeah, Joker, I want to work with you. Like, you're going to run this town.
And then he's like, oh, yeah, I'll help you out. You see that girl over there? Harley Quinn? She's yours now. And then, like, Harley Quinn comes over and starts, like, getting all up on Common, and Common's like, no, you guys have a thing going on. I don't want to be part of this. And then finally they're just like, all right, now you're gonna die. Like,
yeah. You do a really good Jared Leto as the Joker impression, Matt, I gotta say. Did you go full method? Is this a box of used condoms you've mailed to me?
I apologize for my behavior, but yes, I had to do it to get to really feel the character. But the Joker stuff is extremely bad. the thing you were saying about Harley Quinn being on the team, though, this leads into my series of questions that I have that this movie raises. The first one is, why is this the team? One or two lines of throwaway dialogue would have explained why this is the team.
There's no reason for Killer Croc to be there. There's no reason for Katana to be there. Katana is literally just there so they have, like, a magic sword to kill the villain with, which Katana doesn't even do.
Harley Quinn does it.
Because we didn't talk about that. Harley Quinn does it because she's the fucking star of the movie. So Katana's Katana, the thing she's fucking named after, someone else uses. There's no reason for her to be there. It's the most D&D bullshit of, we need a magic sword. Who's got a magic sword? Why do you need a magic sword? You're making it up. You put a weird condition on your own story.
And we talked about this a lot, too. This is supposed to be like a superhero movie universe where, like, things are grim and gritty and dark and real. But Katana is sitting there talking to her dead husband's soul inside a sword.
So, like, there's a scene where Katana's talking to her dead husband. Because Katana, I gotta say, I actually did like Katana in this movie. I think the costume's pretty cool. I think it's a cool look. I thought the actress was very good.
It's like, pretty comics accurate.
As far as, like, origin stuff. But, like, she is introduced, and Rick Flagg's like, that's Katana. She has a katana. It absorbs your soul when she kills you. And then later, she's, like, talking to her sword, and smoke is rising from the sword. Like, very, it's ghost smoke. If there was an effect in Adobe After Effects labeled ghost smoke, that is what this is.
And when Rick Flagg says, her husband's soul is in that katana, and because that katana was the one that killed her husband, don't get killed by that sword because it's going to take your soul. He never says, they say. He never says, yeah. She believes. It is presented as 100% fact.
Which I also liked. I like that he's like, yeah, this world's like super fucked up, yeah, guys. There's a lot of weird shit around.
One admirable thing about this movie is that it's like, no, this is comic books. Hey, guess what, everybody? This is comic books.
Except when it's not, but I'll get to that in a second. So, like, there's a scene where she's talking to her husband's soul, and then, like, Deadshot and Harley Quinn look over at her, and they're like, what a crazo. What a weirdo she is. You know, I thought I was nuts. And it's like, there's clearly a ghost. There's clearly ghost smoke coming out of this sword. You're about to go fight the Enchantress, who's building a machine god.
Okay, so question number one, why is this the team? You could have explained, like, each team member's role. That would have made the introductions longer, probably. But, like, the question of why is Harley Quinn here is a valid one. Because all we get is she's just as crazy and fearless as the Joker. That's all that is
even
said about Harley Quinn.
And more fearless than the Joker, which happens immediately before Joker drives a car off the dock into the water, and she screams and goes, "I can't swim," which is fear.
Yeah,
that is what fear is.
She clearly has more fear than the Joker. So,
which I'm not mad at her as a character for being afraid of drowning. I think that's reasonable. It's weird that Amanda was like, she has zero miedo. And then immediately showing her being afraid of something.
In Suicide Squad 2, can Harley Quinn be wearing Pentagon Jr. cosplay through the whole movie?
Honestly, Matt, the difference between things we like and things we hate is as thin as the difference between Pentagon Jr. and Jared Leto as the Joker.
You're not wrong. Question two, what the fuck is the Enchantress trying to do? We are never told what it is, because all we get is, so the Enchantress has a brother, Enchantro. She leaves her, I don't know, containment, I guess. She's basically just sleeping with Rick Flagg, and that's supposed to contain her for some reason. But she leaves that. She goes to this city, the subway. She puts her brother's soul inside this, like, office worker guy. And he, like, destroys the subway. And she tells him, they don't worship us gods anymore. Now they worship machines. So I'm going to build a machine. And then she does. She builds a machine. What does the machine do? I don't have any fucking clue.
No idea.
What is her plan? I don't know. Later in the movie, she tries to get the Suicide Squad to join her in her cause. We don't have any fucking idea what that cause is.
It's so it's so vague. She's like, join me and we'll rule the world. I built this machine god. Look, it just destroyed an aircraft carrier that we've never seen before. And this, like, we had no idea what the extent or scale of this thing was. It's so, like, Cobra Commander has more defined plans than this.
It's weird, man. I don't understand for even an iota of what the Enchantress wants to do. It's a Rita Repulsa plan. It's, I'm going to create a monster, and then the monster's going to rampage. And that's the extent of it.
At one point, you were like, what is her plan? And I said, after 10,000 years, I'm free. It's time to conquer Earth.
Exactly. Like, it's not too far removed from some Power Rangers shit.
It's the only character who has a concrete motivation in this movie. Amanda Waller, maybe, but it's Deadshot. Deadshot has a concrete motivation, and it's Tom Jane in Arrested Development. It's, I just want my daughter back.
Yes.
He wants custody of his daughter. He wants full custody of his daughter, which is weird because she has a mother who's raising her, and the mother is like, we never see the mother. We know that the mother said to the daughter, hey, you can't be around your dad. He kills people for money, which is true. But we never know why he wants full custody, like why he doesn't like her. Getting divorced from Deadshot is a very reasonable thing to do, but he at least, he wants his daughter and he wants her to have a good life and go to college.
The one thing that we do know is that he doesn't like his daughter's stepdad, Darnell, but we don't know why.
Yeah. Which is very, like, that felt like more of like a Will Smith improv than anything else. Like, because it's a very funny, like, Will Smith style joke.
Yeah.
We don't really know what Harley Quinn wants other than she wants to be with the Joker. We don't know what anybody else in the movie actually wants. Like, Diablo, I guess, wants to be a pacifist, but he's on this mission where he eventually will turn into a fucking... He turns into a Rita Repulsa monster, too, at one point. He turns into a fire giant.
He turns into an Aztec fire giant, yes.
Yeah, and no other character's motivations are, like, relevant to the plot. Like, Captain, like, at one point, Amanda Waller even says, do this and you'll get 10 years off your prison sentence. And Captain Boomerang goes, I'm in a triple life sentence, which is itself buck wild, because the only thing we've seen him do is rob a jewelry store. How many people did he murder that he's got a triple life sentence? Like, you would have to rob 400 jewelry stores
Captain
before
Boomerang.
You would get triple life.
Captain Boomerang is clearly a character in whom no thought went at all.
No, they even they set up a joke that never pays off.
Yeah, they set up a thing about how he loves pink unicorns, and he's carrying a stuffed pink unicorn in his pocket throughout the movie. Then he gets stabbed in the chest with a knife. He pulls the knife out of his chest, and it turns out that it wasn't the pink unicorn that stopped the knife. It was a big stack of money, which we never saw him take. The payoff should have been the fucking unicorn!
The weirdest thing in the world is that this movie has very few clear ideas about what its characters want, and one of the climactic scenes is Enchantress offering them whatever they want, and we see their big dream sequences. And we only see... three of them? We only see three of them. We see Rick Flags.
We see four of them. We see Rick Flags to be with June Moon, the Enchantress, but not as the Enchantress. We see Deadshots, which is to be with his daughter. And apparently...
And to kill Batman.
To kill Batman. We see Harley Quinn.
Which I kind of like. I kind of like that's Deadshot's like fondest wish is that he wants to fucking kill Batman. That's pretty great.
We're going to get into this in the high points, but Will Smith as Deadshot in this movie is maybe my favorite thing in the movie. So we see Harley Quinn's, which is to have a happy domestic life with not the Joker, but Jared Leto.
With Jared Leto. And I wanted this movie to explain. It's like, oh yeah, Harley Quinn's really into that actor, Jared Leto, and she thinks the Joker looks like him. I don't see it.
She was a big fan of My So-Called Life.
Go full fucking Ocean's 12 with it.
There's a part in that where it shows a washing machine and it starts on normal. And there was a line earlier in the movie where Harley Quinn says, or is it the Joker who says normal's not a setting on a washing machine?
No, Harley says it.
Okay.
She's like, none of us can have normal lives. Normal's just a setting on a washing machine. And I actually liked, I think that's a good line. And I think that payoff is one of the only genuinely good payoffs in the movie.
And then the fourth thing that we see, the fourth dream sequence, is Diablo, who has his family back.
Oh, that's right. We do see Diablo.
Yeah.
But we don't see Crocs or Boomerangs or...
Because Croc doesn't seem to want anything, and Boomerang doesn't seem to want anything except to be a bad guy.
Here's a question that I have about this movie, Matt.
Okay.
Why do they send the Suicide Squad on this mission? Because they don't... Like, when they send in the chopper, it doesn't just have the... They don't just airdrop the bad guys, right? They don't just airdrop the villains. They go in with a unit of soldiers.
They do.
Just send the fucking soldiers. If you're going to send in soldiers, don't send soldiers and the fucking supervillains.
I'm sure there was some kind of thought process behind this, like, because it's very clear that Amanda Waller wants to keep this secret and scrub it all from public knowledge by the end of it. But, yeah, there are fucking soldiers with them.
Yeah, and if you're going to send people in... Maybe don't send the extremely unstable criminals that are gonna, like, stop and rob jewelry stores on this covert mission. Send fucking G.I. Joe! What? Or send Rick Flag and Katana, because they're not bad guys. Why? There's no reason for anything in this movie to happen.
Well, okay. Here's my last question. This is the last question we'll go over before we get
in. Why is Katana there? She's not a bad guy!
How she got roped into doing this is a very good question. Like, what is her reasoning for being part of this? Is this just her day job? That's all I can figure.
They don't even do the minor work of going, oh yeah, if Katana helps out the squad, we're going to give her the man who killed her husband. Because we see her, like, killing some of the Yakuza guys who murdered her husband. But, like, not the one who actually did it, just a guy who was there. So, like, they don't even do the effort of doing the easiest, shortest explanation to explain why this character is there.
Okay, here's my last question. How is the Suicide Squad fundamentally different from the superheroes we've seen in the DC movie universe up to this point? Wonder Woman not inclusive, because Wonder Woman hadn't come out by this point yet. Here's why I bring up that question. The big question, when you said Amanda Waller, the reason the Suicide Squad exists is just because Amanda Waller wanted them to exist. The question she used to kind of sell the idea of the Suicide Squad to the U.S. government was, hey, what if a Superman shows up, but this time he's not on our side? This time he doesn't share our values. What happens then? We need some kind of line of defense against that. My counterpoint to that is, what values of ours does Superman share? Because all we've seen Superman do up to this point is fight Batman and not save anybody.
And fucking kill a guy.
Again, they have not done the fucking legwork. We haven't seen Superman be a good guy.
The first thing Superman does is surrender to the government. The second thing he does is kill a guy. Third thing he does is fuck. Fourth thing he does is die. I lost count.
But also, like, everyone has immediately deified Superman in death. Because there's a hilarious scene where Amanda Waller is walking into a building and a guy is holding up a Superman t-shirt. And then he turns it around and on the reverse side it says, remember?
Here's my thing. Amanda Waller says in the 40-ounce steak scene, she's like, Superman changed everything when he flew across the sky. And I wanted to be like, how? Explain how that changed everything. Because you've got a crocodile man. You've got a dude with fire powers who have been around for a while. You've got Batman, who's just, you know, over in Gotham City and is old as hell. So
who's been working for a quarter century, it seems like. He's been doing this for 25 years.
Batman's been around long enough that he has at least three of his own supervillains that are in this movie. You have the Enchantress, who's a god. You have a woman with a magic ancient sword. Superman didn't change shit. You gotta give us something.
Do the legwork. Just do the legwork. That's all we're asking for you to do.
By this movie's logic, if Zod had attacked and Superman did not exist, he probably could have been stopped by Katana and the Enchantress and Harley Quinn. Because, you know, Enchantress basically just, it's another movie where they build a big fucking machine at the end. So, what is the fundamental difference? Why are these guys different?
I think we've discussed enough. Let's talk about some of the high points of Suicide Squad. I think we've been over a lot of them. It has a distinct visual look. I think that's number one on the docket. Number two, some of the performances, we've made fun of a few of the performances, but some of the performances are pretty good. Will Smith is really good in this movie.
Will Smith is good, but he's very, he's Jim West. You know, it's the same performance you see in Wild Wild West. It's the same performance you see in Independence Day, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think it works for the film.
Well, I think here's the key difference between those movies and this one, or that those performances in this one. In those movies, Will Smith is nominally playing a hero, right? He is the hero of the movie. He's doing heroic things. His version of Deadshot is not a hero. He can be sympathetic. He can be, like, as an audience, we can root for him, but he's not a good guy. Part of his fantasy is to kill Batman. He never apologizes for killing people. He never apologized for being a hitman. He just wants his daughter to be okay. And I think that degree of nuance, you know, gray area kind of characterization, it's one, not something Will Smith does all the time. And two, he pulls it off.
I do think this movie and Smith's performance in particular makes a good attempt at capturing Deadshot's kind of amorality, where he's just completely amoral and kind of has a death wish in the comics. But Smith is tasked with doing that in a way that is, again, like sympathetic and affable enough that we can root for him. And it, you know, he's quippy in the same way as he always is, which, again, not a bad thing. I think it works.
Yeah, I think it works for the character really well. I think Will Smith, like, I'm a Will Smith fan to begin with. I like him in basically everything, but I really like I did not necessarily expect to like him in this movie, and I liked him a lot.
Margot Robbie is, I mean, very clearly, like, the star of the show. I was initially a little disappointed in her performance because I had heard that, like, oh, you know, if there's one good thing about this movie, it's Harley. But I think what tripped me up was that her accent is wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, it changes throughout the movie.
She sometimes has the Arlene Sorkin voice. She's sometimes doing a New York kind of thing. She's sometimes Australian.
Yeah.
Just straight up Australian. Aside from that, her performance is actually very good. Now that I've had, like, I'm glad I had a day to kind of marinate with it a little bit. When she comes back and she thinks the Joker's dead and she's kind of sitting on the car, like, it is a wild ass scene because she, like, takes off her bondage collar and looks at it sadly. But then, like, when everybody comes out of the building that they're in, she kind of, like, you know, makes herself stop crying and, like, strike a pose, and she's like, oh, I'm wacky Harley Quinn with no emotions.
She turns on, right? Like, the key to her performance is that Harley Quinn is a performance.
Yes. That's the most nuance we get from her, but it makes the character. It completely makes the character in the movie. That she's playing a role all the time is really good, and it's a really smart way to play Harley, I think. So yeah, like, accent, pretty rough. Performance, quite good.
I would also say Viola Davis is really good as Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
She has the most thankless role in this movie because she has to deliver all that fucking exposition. Amanda Waller is a character who is by her nature mysterious and doesn't have clear motivations, and you don't really know what she's going for or what she's doing. And she verges toward being unlikable, especially after she kills those workers in that office. And yet, Viola Davis is commanding. Anytime she appears on screen, she is commanding.
She even gets a scene where I think it's Deadshot who kind of mouths off to her and says, like, hey, if you don't tell us what's going on, I'm going to kill you. And Katana gets ready to, like, fight Deadshot. And Viola Davis just like sticks her arm out and goes, I got this. It's fine. Which is a very Amanda Waller thing to do. Like fearless, very confident. It's that's a decent performance. As you said, Matt, I really liked how comic booky this movie is. It is a movie with fucking magic swords and a crocodile man.
Yep.
Which if we could push the DC movies in that direction more, then I would be a much happier person.
Yeah. Like we said, this movie's not good, but at least it does not shy away from being a comic book movie, because not only does it have a magic katana and a crocodile man, Katana looks like Katana. Even though the makeup job is bad, Killer Croc is a crocodile man. Deadshot sometimes looks like comic book Deadshot when he puts on the mask. Captain Boomerang has a great, like, semi-cartoony look. I think he's one of the better-looking characters in the movie.
He does throw razor-sharp boomerangs at people.
Yeah, he has razor-sharp boomerangs that have a phone app attached to them. When this movie decides to embrace comic bookiness, or even video gaminess, like the fights in the city streets, that's sometimes when it's at its best.
Yeah. Yeah, when it turns into Final Fight and Streets of Rage for a minute, it's fun.
Low points of Suicide Squad. Matt,
we haven't talked about them at all. Are you ready?
The music cues.
Oh, they're so bad. Okay, so one of the worst parts about this movie, and a thing that is unendurable while you're watching it, but easy to forget once you start talking about the plot, every 5 minutes, there's a music cue.
Well,
and I feel like this is what they did.
They're all front-loaded, though. It's like the first half of the movie, and then the whole back half of the movie doesn't really have any at all. It's just score.
It's got a couple. It's got a couple.
But not nearly as many as the start.
They're very bad. And I feel like this is, you know, we all heard like, oh, hey, they're like doing, you know, reshoots and edits on the Suicide Squad movie because everybody liked that trailer. I do feel like you can see a lot of weird editing in this movie, but I would bet you money that the one thing they did more than anything else, since the trailer had Bohemian Rhapsody in it, and everybody was like, yeah, I think they were like, oh shit, this could be our Guardians of the Galaxy, and they went back and put in all these music, like pop music cues, which are extremely bad.
Well, okay, let's explain why they're bad. They're not bad because the songs are bad. The songs are generally pretty good. They are just the most absolutely incredibly obvious music cues that you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's the first – it's like fucking word association. When Harley Quinn shows up and she's alone, they play You Don't Own Me. When with the first time we see Amanda Waller, they play Sympathy for the Devil. The next time we see Harley Quinn and we're getting her origin story, they play Super Freak. When we see Deadshot doing an assassination, they play Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap.
No. That's – they play that one for Australian Captain Boomerang.
Oh, that's right! The only one that threw me is that when we see Killer Croc, they play Creedence Clearwater Revival, but they don't play Born on the Bayou. They play Fortunate Son. And I was like, I was trying to figure it out, and I'm like, is that because Born on the Bayou was the theme from the Swamp Thing movie? And Swamp Thing is just like, has a claim on that forever.
During a Joker scene, they play Paranoid. When they're assembling the team, they play Seven Nation Army.
Yep.
When Deadshot is shooting all the targets, they play Black Skinhead.
They play Without Me at one point, which the Eminem song, which the first line is, I've created a monster. This is when the Suicide Squad's going on a mission, and is also related, the video where Dr. Dre and Eminem dress up as Batman and Robin.
Bananas. When Harley Quinn is beating up a bunch of putties in an elevator, they play Come Baby Come, just so they can get to the part about the bat.
Swing, bada, 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 swing. Yeah, like, and they time it. They time it. It's incredibly bad.
They're so absolutely fucking obvious. Like, there's a lot of music cues in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, but they're not the most obvious fucking songs you can think of.
Yeah, it's not just Space Oddity over and over in Guardians of the Galaxy. It's not just Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
What are some other low points in the movie? I think Enchantress across the board is bad.
I think Cara Delevingne is good. I think her performance, again, is good. I think she does a nice job being, like, wide-eyed, young June Moon.
I think she's okay.
Versus, like, creepy Enchantress.
She's okay as June Moon. I think once she becomes the Enchantress, and this isn't really her fault, but she's, like, 90 pounds. It's very hard for her to be imposing. Especially because they make her brother, like the CGI brother monster, twice her size. Twice her height.
Oh, everything about, like, Enchantro and the Machine God is trash. It is barely written.
Yeah, and like, they have to dub her. And, again, I do not understand why she's constantly covered in grime. Except to make her not look like she's a teenager.
I think it's because Cara Delevingne is 25. And she's a beautiful young actress. And I feel like they were like, if we just give her, like, they hide her because they make her all grimy and they also give her the hair in front of her face. That said, I do think the actual transition into becoming the Enchantress is one of the cooler effects in the movie.
The thing where the hand comes up from
the hands coming
the out. Ground. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Joker's bad.
Joker's extremely bad.
And it wouldn't be as bad as it is if we didn't know how much work went into it.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
Legitimately.
Rick Flagg is also bad. Like, he's just a piece of white bread out there.
There's no reason for half the characters to be in this movie. Like, Killer Croc does nothing until, like, at the end where they're like, oh, I can swim through the sewers. I'll have a sewer level.
Yeah, he's got a sewer level so he can go get a bomb that they need. That's the only reason he's there. I think we've been through a lot of the bigger low points of the movie and how the thing doesn't make sense and they didn't earn anything.
Yeah, nothing makes sense. Nothing is earned. People, like, just become best friends out of nowhere. It's again, it's not a good movie.
All right, I think that leads us into final thoughts about Suicide Squad.
I don't know if I said this to you yesterday, Matt, or if it's just something I've been thinking about, but I feel like the entire reason we have this, like, interconnecting DC movies now, because we've got four as of this week, is because we have, like, 20 Marvel movies.
Isn't it five?
Batman v Superman, Man of Steel, Suicide Squad. Oh, yeah, Wonder Woman and Justice League. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have five interconnected movies because Marvel proved it could work, right? Like, proved a shared universe could work. And I think DC is still, like, looking to the competition for cues on a lot of things. And with this movie, I think they figured they could do their Guardians of the Galaxy, which, you know, take some obscure characters and put them in the spotlight and make them, like, big franchise players. And also do their Jessica Jones at the same time. Their Netflix Daredevil Jessica Jones. Because there's so much fucking cussing in this movie. It's PG-13. But it is foul-mouthed. It's like this podcast.
They get a lot of shits in there, and they get one F-bomb. I don't
Harley
think
Quinn keeps calling people pussies.
She does. I don't think you're wrong about that. This movie is certainly no Guardians of the Galaxy.
It's at its best when it's fun and comic booky. Again, yeah. Like Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's not at its worst when it's, like, straight grimy, like, street level superhero-y. It's just worse in combination and kind of ineptly done.
Yes. However, among the it's no Guardians of the Galaxy, but among the DC films, I feel like a lot of people who you would ask would put this at the bottom of the list. It is, in fact, second from the top. I said this after I saw Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman is far and away the best DC movie. It's not even a contest. Suicide Squad is number two. Because even though there's an ineptness to the way this movie is made, there's a lot of bad choices and bad decisions, and a lot of things that don't make any sense, it's not, at its heart, a cynical movie. If anything, it's trying to be a movie about people who you would not expect to come together and become friends, becoming friends. By the end of it, Diablo is calling them a family. It is a movie that is ultimately supposed to be about friendship, even though that friendship isn't earned. It's supposed to be about these quote-unquote bad people who come together and learn to respect each other through hardship, through going through a trial by fire, right? That's a classic story, and there's nothing wrong with that story. Whereas Man of Steel is, sometimes you have to kill somebody for good.
Yeah.
And Batman v Superman is about, I don't even know what the fuck.
It's very bad.
So thematically, this movie is far better than those two because it doesn't have the cynicism.
I think it has a brand of cynicism that's different, but I don't think you're wrong. If nothing else, like, I mean, Enchantress doesn't die at the end of this movie, or June Moon doesn't. Like, she gets her heart cut out, but, like, she lives. Like, June Moon is alive at the end of this movie. Like, does Diablo die? Is that what happens?
I don't remember what happens to Diablo.
I mean, I lost it after he turned into a Rita Repulsa monster.
Well, that last action sequence, that video I've talked about previously, that's about the editing in this movie, and that should have been one of our low points because the editing is bad. The final battle sequence is kind of a bunch of visual nonsense. Like, it's very hard to tell what's going on. Like, once the heart gets cut out, it disappears.
Once they cut her heart out.
Until magically Rick Flag has it again.
The villain doesn't die, or the human part of the villain doesn't die. So that alone puts it, like, way up above the other two that I've seen. I do think it's worth noting, no one gets punished for any of their actions ever.
I mean, Deadshot goes back to jail.
Deadshot goes back to jail, but he does get to see his daughter.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm talking about, like, Amanda Waller, like, basically being responsible for leveling an American city. And she still gets to run her Suicide Squad, even though that mission is, like...
She, in the post-credits scene, she goes and meets with Bruce Wayne. And Bruce Wayne is like, I'll protect you.
Yeah. Because he gives her... Because she gives him the file on Aquaman. Bruce Wayne couldn't find out about Aquaman. Get the fuck out of here.
All right, I think that's where we're going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. If you want to send us an email to suggest a movie or otherwise get in touch, you can get in touch at moviefighterscast@gmail.com. You can also head over to moviefighterscast.tumblr.com to check out our Tumblr. It's where we update all our snack situation stuff. We will be back in December with something very, very special for you guys. Just you wait. It's very exciting. So stay tuned for that. We're back on track with Movie Fighters. We are hoping to be monthly in 2018. So come on back and listen. We'll see you guys next month.
Bye, everybody. We love you.
This has been a Kleitas Media production.